Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
All right, welcome in on a Thursday afternoon. It is WKAR's Current Sports. Jack Kerwin in for L. Martin. I got Connor Mathis to my right, and I got Alec working behind the board. Connor, how you doing this morning, man?
Doing well.
Glad to hear it. Alec, what about you? How are we doing this fine Thursday afternoon? Not morning. I'm clearly just not with it right now.
Your brain's on summer mode.
Absolutely. How you doing,
Alec? Yeah, I had a couple coffees, so I'm feeling a little jittery, but I'm feeling good.
Glad to hear it. We got an action-packed show for you today. We'll try to hold down the fort these next couple of days. Al Martin should be back in Tuesday afternoon for the Tuesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports, but it'll be us three rocking the mic until then. So to lead off this show, right after our Current Sports quick hit headliners, I just have a confession to make that I know very little about the sport that I love, that is the NHL, because following Game 1 and the utter domination of the St. Louis Blues at the hands of the Boston Bruins that we saw for roughly the last 40 minutes of that game, I suspected that this would be a short series. I didn't give the Blues much of a shot to win yesterday at all. And I got to give props to Jason Ruff, the broadcaster and director of media relations for the Odessa Jackalopes. Not because he picked the St. Louis Blues to win this game. He did not. He had the Bruins winning in overtime. I think it was 3-2. I think he accurately predicted the score. But that being said, he picked the game to go to overtime. He had more faith in the St. Louis Blues than I did. Now, he didn't have as much faith in them as I guess he should have, because they wound up pulling the game out in overtime, and they dominated the Bruins, much like the Bruins dominated the Blues in Game 1. So, you know, in that aspect, props to Jason for being bolder than I. But, I mean, we clearly both know nothing about hockey, which is pretty sad when you think about it. But I'll give you my thoughts on that game, and I think where the series will turn from there. And then later on in the hour, we'll break down, you know, the news that broke earlier this week that I believe Connor got to address with Al on, I think, the Tuesday edition of Current Sports. And that is Joey Hauser, former Marquette power forward, one of the most impressive freshmen, I would say, in college basketball last season that's still in college, that didn't make the jump to pro. Transferring to Michigan State, it was announced earlier this week, a stretch four who will be able to kind of play a more refined role, more refined version of what Kenny Goins brought to Michigan State last year, at least on the offensive end of the floor. A 6'9", small forward slash power forward who can play beyond the three-point line. He shot, I think, 43% from three last season. And there's one deal I would love to make with the devil, or, you know, the college basketball gods, if you will, regarding Joey Hauser and his future at Michigan State. We'll bring that discussion to the forefront a little bit later in the hour. And then NBA Finals, just to close everything out. And, you know, I'm not a big NBA guy. I think those of you that follow along with Current Sports regularly know that, you know, Al's a pretty big NBA guy. Connor's obviously a big NBA guy as well. I'm more of a hockey guy. You know, obviously that's what I'm tuning into at this point in the year. But I feel like at the same time, I feel just as educated, if you will, than I would feel if I were to have watched religiously the NBA playoffs going up to this point, because, you know, I pay attention on social media, and I've seen what Kawhi Leonard has done for the Toronto Raptors. But that being said, I mean, the Golden State Warriors they're superhuman. You know, they don't have a big three, they have a big four, arguably a big five, depending on what you'll get out of DeMarcus Cousins on a day-to-day basis. And I mean, I understand that Kevin Durant will be out at least for the beginning of this series. Connor, do you think he'll be back at any point for this series?
Honestly, unless it goes deep, I don't see him coming back. Why would he jeopardize his upcoming free agency, especially if he knows they're going to if he thinks they're going to win. I mean, I don't see him coming back unless he's absolutely needed.
I agree with that, and I don't really think he will be needed. Spoiler alert, I don't give Toronto much of a chance, despite how impressive Kawhi has been so far for the Raptors. I mean, Draymond Green's been reinvigorated. We've seen him playing a brand of basketball that he really hasn't played in a few years, I would say. So I don't really see Jurassic Park and the city of Toronto getting the championship that they've been coveting.
It's not going to stop them from showing out, though, because I saw a tweet where it was like about 7 a.m. in the morning and people were already filing in to Jurassic Park.
No, absolutely. And I mean, we saw it with the Blue Jays a couple years ago, that Toronto is more than just a hockey town, that they are very eccentric, very ecstatic fan base. And, you know, they do a good job representing for, you know, the entire country of Canada, if you will. But, you know, going back to it, I really don't give Toronto much of a chance. And I'll give you more of my reasons why, and Connor can kind of lead the roundtable discussion on that one, because I'm obviously not a big NBA guy. But that and more coming up in this hour of WKR's Current Sports. You know what's next. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. And we start off with Juwan Howard being officially introduced as the next head men's basketball coach at the University of Michigan. That took place within the last hour. He was overcome with tears of joy as he was introduced as the new basketball coach. The former member of the Fab Five has inked a five-year contract that will pay him $2 million in his first year. The former Miami Heat assistant under head coach Eric Spoelstra had been a candidate to be a head coach in the NBA. He replaces John Beilein, who left to coach the Cleveland Cavaliers. He said he felt he let the program down because U of M didn't win a national championship during his playing days, but he now has a chance to rectify that, and he talked earlier about how much this hire means for him and where it ranks in terms of his accomplishments in his life. Take a listen.
My grandmother, she's so proud right now. My best friend, Lamont Juice Carter. Many of you know who's well-connected and I have a close relationship with. He's so proud right now. Never thought that this day would ever come. But more importantly, I'm overjoyed for this new opportunity. You know, this is the second biggest accomplishment in life for me, to be the head basketball coach at the University of Michigan. Now, I know some of you are saying, like, okay, well, what was number one? Getting a degree from the University of Michigan. That was my number one accomplishment in life thus far. That degree meant so much to me.
So there you go. We'll give you more from the press conference in the tomorrow's Friday edition of Current Sports, but there's just a little bit talking about Juwan Howard talking about, you know, where taking this job ranks in terms of his accomplishments so far in his life, and he referenced back his time as a student athlete at the University of Michigan. Shifting gears here to the NFL, Malik McDowell, former MSU standout defensive tackle, his career never started, and the team that drafted him wants its money back. The Seattle Seahawks filed suit in federal court on Wednesday, that is yesterday, stating the former Michigan State defensive lineman has failed to pay back the almost $800,000 an arbitrator ordered him to after McDowell suffered a head injury in an ATV accident in July of 2017, keeping him from ever playing a single snap in the NFL after being drafted in the second round of the 2017 NFL draft. Seahawks doctors never cleared McDowell to play, and after the 2018 season, the team released McDowell. According to the lawsuit filed in U.S. District Court in the Eastern District of Michigan, McDowell was ruled to be in breach of his contract when he suffered the non-football injury and that he would need to forfeit his signing bonus totaling almost $1.6 million. The Seahawks withheld payment of $800,000 for the 2018 season, leading to the amount of just under the additional $800,000. That was $799,238. That was ruled McDowell must pay back. So not so great news there for the former defensive tackle, former standout prospect here in East Lansing at Michigan State University. All right, shifting gears to Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Finals. I'll have more of this for you later on in the hour. But again, going back to my main thesis that I just don't know anything about the NHL, and I would say most experts don't as well, because despite the dominant performance of the Bruins in Game 1, St. Louis responded yesterday. They actually never led in this game until the overtime goal scored by Carl Gunnarsson in overtime to give them the 3-2 victory. Very physical game, one that, you know, kind of plays to both teams' strengths, because these two teams are, you know, they're not your new wave hockey team with a new wave identity. These are physical, brutal teams to play against, who also have some guys that can put the puck in the net. An update as well on the Matt Grizzlick injury sustained yesterday is that St. Louis forward Oscar Sundqvist will have a hearing today for boarding Boston's Matt Grizzlick. This was tweeted out by the NHL Department of Player Safety's page. I didn't really think it was necessarily a malicious hit. I mean, kind of a gray area there along the boards. And I think what you should really key in on is that, you know, when Matt Grizzlick went up against the boards, the level of his head rose up at the last second as he kind of went off balance. And I think that's what led the principal point of contact to be at his head as opposed to his shoulder. So very unfortunate situation. We wish Matt Grizzlick the best of luck in his return. He will not be traveling with the team, I heard. But we wish him the best of luck and a speedy recovery from his head injury. And as far as Sundqvist is concerned, I don't think a suspension is warranted, just because I didn't see it as a malicious hit. But, you know, we'll see what comes of his hearing. And Game 3 will take place Saturday at 8 p.m. All right, shifting gears to the NBA Finals. Game 1 is tonight with Kawhi and the Toronto Raptors hosting the Golden State Warriors. That is Kawhi Leonard, former San Antonio Spur. The Warriors, who have been without Kevin Durant on the court, are, I don't want to say they're doing better without him in the lineup, but, you know, they're still very capable of winning this series and taking out any team in the entire NBA, even without Kevin Durant. You know, much as they were before Durant joined the Warriors, you know, they were a 73-9 team that year. And, you know, as great as it was for LeBron and his legacy to win that series against Golden State, and I believe it was 2016, Connor, let's be real, LeBron would have never gotten that ring if Draymond Green wasn't suspended in Game 5. LeBron deserves mad credit, obviously, for coming back from that 3-1 deficit against a 73-9 team. But let's call a spade here. I mean, the Golden State Warriors would have won that series probably in 5 games if Draymond Green isn't suspended.
If Draymond could keep his cool and not lose it, which we'll get to it later, but I think that's their biggest thing, is that the team needs to keep their cool.
But, I mean, you do agree with me, right?
Oh, that,
I mean,
100%. Yeah. No. Draymond was dominant that series. Was making all the hustle plays, locking down people. It also helped that LeBron's that team, the two other superstars on it, didn't wake up until about Game 6. So, you know, Draymond being gone definitely helped the Cavs' cause.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, speaking of guys returning from injury, though, Kevin Durant might be out, but DeMarcus Cousins has just been cleared to play in tonight's game. During the regular season, Cousins started in only 30 games and averaged 16 points and 8 boards for Golden State. Tip-off will be at 9 p.m. tonight on ABC. Wow, that's a late tip-off. Isn't Game 1 in Toronto?
Primetime. You gotta put everything in primetime.
That's too late, though. That's
too late. Gotta put everything in primetime.
Yeah, whatever.
Jack.
Whatever. All right, shifting gears back to college football. After Urban Meyer took over as Ohio State's head coach in 2012, that is Ohio State's former head coach, Urban Meyer, he immediately took the conference by storm. He wound up winning his first 24 games until losing to, you guessed it, the Michigan State Spartans in the Big Ten Championship in 2013. And he also suffered his first regular season defeat in conference in 2015 to the Spartans. That season, they were coming off of their national championship win in 2014. So many NFL players on that team. Joey Bosa, Darren Lee, Taylor Decker, Ezekiel Elliott, and whatnot. They fell to the Spartans, obviously, 17-14 in that game, though. And he has listed it as the most painful of the 9 losses Meyer sustained in 7 seasons leading the Buckeyes. He said in an interview with the Columbus Dispatch that game crosses his mind every day. And I quote, "That's the one. I don't blame others. I blame myself," end quote. "I could have done some better things as a coach that day. That 2015 Michigan State game, that was a tough one." Connor, if you can remember, that was the game where Urban Meyer forgot that Ezekiel Elliott, former...
exists.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in his defense, here's the thing about that, you know, ever since that game happened, people always made excuses for Ohio State with the play calling and not using Ezekiel Elliott. With that being said, Zeke had, I think it was like 12 carries for 32 yards.
Yeah, he was getting
stuffed. So, yeah, he wasn't making plays when he got the ball. I'm not defending Urban Meyer's decision because at that point, I mean, your best player needs to get the ball in a game like that.
Especially in the rain and that.
Yeah, you can't throw the ball.
Neutralizes
guys like Michael Thomas, who was a stud that season for the Buckeyes before he went on to the New Orleans Saints. But you know what, in Meyer's defense, Zeke didn't make plays when he did get the ball. But anyway, they were buried that day in late November by a 41-yard field goal from Michael Geiger as time expired. And perhaps the funniest part of this game was that Urban Meyer, the famed coach, one of the greatest coaches in college football history, was defeated by Tyler O'Connor and Damian Terry at quarterback because Connor Cook was injured and couldn't go for the Tigers that day. So couldn't go for the Spartans, I should say, that day. I've got baseball on my mind because of this next headliner. But shifting gears, the Detroit Tigers, they still suck. They won yesterday. I think that puts the record at 22-32 on the season, but
21-32.
You sure 21-32? Okay.
Yes.
Well, whatever. 21-32, 11 games under .500. We'll follow up on them. When the trade deadline hits, we'll see what comes of Matt Boyd, Nick Castellanos, Shane Green, and maybe some others. Anyway, shifting back to the NBA, the Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey has made his entire roster and future draft picks available in trade talks, a dramatic initiative with hopes of reshaping the team into a championship contender, league sources told ESPN. The possibility of trading all NBA guard James Harden is believed to be extremely limited, and rightfully so, but the rest of the roster, including even guys like Chris Paul and big man Clint Capella, could be more realistic trade targets, according to sources. Paul's remaining contract at 3 years and $124 million and advancing age make deal possibilities somewhat prohibitive. Do you see him being moved this summer?
I could see him being moved to a team that just needs something. The big one that people are mentioning are the Suns. The Suns are in rebuild mode. They need people to bring in and buy tickets.
Absolutely.
They don't have a plan. I mean, for them to have that much disposable income, I mean, why not go out and get Chris Paul just for nothing else to bring people into the stands? I think the other interesting one is Clint Capella. I could see getting moved, but again, both those contracts are pretty high and would be much harder to move.
Do you like what the Houston Rockets are doing, though, understanding that with their current makeup, they probably can't win a title, so shuffling the deck a little bit?
I think they saw the writing on the wall. They saw what the Raptors did last year and the drastic overall. Like, look, if we have a small window, we got to capitalize on it. I think that's what the Rockets are drawing inspiration from. And maybe it pays off like it did for the Raptors. Maybe it doesn't. But in any event, their team's getting too old. They missed the title window with the current squad as is. So they need to do something.
Especially with Chris Paul. I've always been pretty critical of Chris Paul. I don't really think he's a leader, but
I think it's more of so with James Harden. You've lost the title window where Chris Paul's gonna be the one to get you to a title.
You're
in danger of losing the title window between James Harden, who's one of the top guards in the 21st century, and then Clint Capella, who's an up-and-coming big man. I mean, you got to make some
moves.
They're
going to have to pay Capella sooner, or have they already paid him.
They already gave him an extension, but I mean, you have to get some younger guys in there. The roster's too old.
Sure. All right, well, that does it for your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, we'd love to hear from you. Phone number is 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. You can also tweet the show at WKAR News. right, and we begin this Thursday afternoon edition of Current Sports. Again, Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin. I got Connor Mathis with me, riding shotgun, and Alec Rio working the board for me today. We begin this Thursday episode of Current Sports, probably a lot different than Al would, just because we got the hockey guy running the show tonight. So let's get into what we saw yesterday in Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Obviously, a drastic shift, or kind of a role reversal, if you will, from Game 1, where we saw the Bruins be the dominant team. St. Louis, if not for Tuukka Rask, would have ran Boston out of their own building yesterday. I mean, the shot differential was drastic. Possession was drastic. The possession discrepancy was drastic. And, I mean, if it weren't for St. Louis being their own worst enemy and shooting themselves in the foot with two goalie interference penalties, one 5 minutes into the game and then the other one after they'd just finished up about half of a double minor 4 minute power play, you know, St. Louis could have cashed in once or twice more, and I mean that would have taken a goal off the board for Boston as well. So I mean, what I see here is, you know, Al touched on it yesterday as well, as it's not a series until the road team takes a game. And from here, I just see with the momentum shift, you know, I'm very confident that the St. Louis Blues going back home for their first Stanley Cup final game since, I believe it's 1970, Alec. It's been almost 50 years.
Yep, and that was when Bobby Orr and the Boston Bruins shut them out 4-0.
Yeah, no, that was actually, they've been to the Stanley Cup final, I believe it's three times, 68, 69, and 70, and yet yesterday was their first Stanley Cup final victory in franchise history. So, pretty remarkable stuff there. And just moving forward, I mean, we'll see what comes of the injury to Matt Grizzlick, but I mean, that's a notable injury for a young D-core that, I mean, they've gotten production from all kinds of guys, not just Grizzlick, obviously, but some of the bigger names. You know, Charlie McAvoy and Brandon Carlo's been kind of the big story coming out this postseason for the Bruins, how sturdy he is in his own end. But moving forward, I mean, this is significant. I think you'll probably see John Moore step into the lineup for Grizzlick in his absence. But, you know, the Blues obviously were able to take advantage of the fatigue from the Bruins, only working with five defensemen for most of that game. And, you know, you got to hand it to them that they're able to get this series knotted up. And I think that's a win anytime in the NHL, anytime you start out on the road. You know, you're not the team with home ice advantage. If you're able to get one of the first two and come back home with the series knotted up, that's always a win, especially if it's game two, because you can have momentum moving into game three as opposed to winning game one and losing game two on the opposing ice, and you're coming off of a loss returning home. But, you know, this could be a big momentum shift for the St. Louis Blues. And you know what, Connor, I just got to say, I'm really tired of Boston. You know, they've already won the World Series and the Super Bowl this year. I cannot bear to see the Boston Bruins win the Stanley Cup as well.
Oh, I was saying to some friends, I'm like, you know, either I want one of two things to happen. I either want them to win this, and then Boston goes on a title drought for 50 years, so they can go on to be the like the rest of the sports world and have to wait their turn for finals and championships. Or I just want them to lose just for once. My goodness, I'm so tired of seeing Boston win.
This just seems like it's one of those, kind of like what you see from Duke, especially last season with guys like Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett and Cam Reddish all linking up on the same team. It's Boston versus America. I mean, St. Louis is just the most likable team in this scenario because they haven't been to the Stanley Cup final in 49 years. And I don't think there's anybody outside of New England that's rooting for the Boston Bruins to win this series, right?
No. I think a lot of people are just want Boston to kind of feel what it's like to be every other sports city on earth and have to wait their turn for a championship instead of, you know, look at that. 6 months rolls around. All right, time to go again.
You're preaching to the choir here, obviously. Detroit native myself, Metro Detroit. The city of Detroit has not witnessed a playoff series win since 2013 when the Detroit Red Wings advanced to the second round. And I saw an article the other day that the Lions have gone now over 10,000 days since their last playoff win.
Yeah, and it's looking like they're more stuck in neutral. It doesn't look like they're getting close to that anytime soon.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the way all the Detroit sports teams are right now, I would argue, because I would actually make the argument that the playoff team, the team that made the playoffs out of the city in Detroit this year, out of the city of Detroit this year, is the one that's farthest away from contending for a championship, just because I think they have to blow it all up before they can even begin to, you know, start bringing in the pieces to win a championship, and that is the Detroit Pistons.
See, I think they're in a spot where I think the coach might have one vision, the owner has another vision, your GM has another vision. I think it's a possibility that that down the line that they could do something, but it would have to be a little bit of sacrificing of certain pieces that some Detroit fans and certain people in that area do not want to get rid of, i.e.
Andre Drummond and Reggie Jackson, both of them.
My goodness. Just, I don't understand people's affection for Andre Drummond. He's a good...
Me either.
He is Hall of very good. He's not going to be your make-or-break guy to get to the next stage where you want to go.
Well, here's the thing, too, is you see guys like Joel Embiid, and I understand that Joel Embiid's had the health issues, right? But you see, I mean, even Brooke Lopez, right? What you saw him do for the Milwaukee Bucks in the playoffs last year, where he can give you some outside shooting, he can space the floor. Andre Drummond is the most antiquated big man I think I've ever seen, just because, I mean, he can't really score facing the basket. He's got his hook shot, which, I mean, I give him some props, that he's actually diversified the ways he can score at the rim a little bit more than he used to, and he's improved his free throw shooting as well, obviously. But, I mean, he's a guy who can fall out of bed with a double-double. But, I mean, how valuable is that in today's NBA?
Here's the thing. In today's NBA, if you're a big man, you have to, and you can't shoot the outside shot, you have to be a defensive prowess. You have to be able to score. You have to be able to facilitate your shooters. Drummond is just a pure 100% rebound machine, and that is what he's good at. And there's no shame in that, but in today's NBA, you cannot be one of your franchise centerpieces be, if they're a center, be only a rebounding specialist. It's just not going to cut it in today's NBA. They need to move on from him.
Well, I would also make the argument that one of your franchise centerpieces playing the position of center is also really not ideal, because we talk about we talk about a positionless league in the NBA today. I mean, you see guys like Giannis bringing the ball up the court. Obviously, LeBron James has been a point forward seemingly his entire career. But a guy who primarily plays on the low block and is completely useless facilitating
and
outside the three-point line.
And can't stretch anything. I mean, like, I give mad props to Blake Griffin.
I feel horrible for Blake Griffin.
He used to be that guy. All he could do is dunk. And now he's reinvented his game. If I'm the Pistons, and I really am serious about making a push, scrap everything but Blake. Give Blake the keys until he completely breaks down, and see what you can do with that small window that Blake has left.
Yep, you're going to have to get some big-name free agents to go with him, though, because Blake Griffin isn't getting any younger. No. So, no, I hear what you're saying, and I mean, as of right now, I don't see the Pistons tearing it down, so it would be a small window that they'd have to pursue, but, you know, I really don't see the Pistons contending for anything in the near future. They can maybe make the playoffs like they did this year, and then they get blown out by, you know, a real contender. So
yeah,
it's the life of a Detroit sports fan right now. But anyway, shifting gears back to the city that wins everything, the city of Boston, going for their third championship this calendar year. You know, this game really opened my eyes that the St. Louis Blues, they can hang with the Bruins. And I mean, to a degree, I think you have to give them some respect just because of the road that they went on, that they went through to get to this point now, obviously. And I mean, it's never easy getting to the Stanley Cup Finals. You got to win 12 games. You got to win three series in the most, what's the word? The most wild of the four major professional sports, in that we never have any idea really who's going to be in the Cup Final. I mean, the Tampa Bay Lightning were penciled in by so many people, myself included, to make it to the final this year, and then they were out in four games in the first round. So, you know, with the amount of parity in the NHL, how tough it is to get to the final, you always got to give credit. But, I mean, let's be real. The Boston Bruins took on the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are an up-and-coming team trying to find their way in the playoffs specifically. I mean, they've been a successful team in the regular season, but...
Fun fact, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Florida Panthers are the only two teams that have not won a playoff series since the salary cap era began.
Oh, that's beautiful. Let's keep it that way. I don't ever want to see the Toronto Maple Leafs win anything that's competitive. I just cannot stand them, and they've only been back for a couple of years, and I'm already tired of them. So I love that stat, to be honest with you, Alec. But you know what? Talking about the Bruins, obviously that was impressive, taking out the Toronto Maple Leafs, a team that, you know, got a lot better this offseason, adding guys like John Tavares, and then at the trade deadline acquiring Jake Muzzin. You know, that was a big time win for, you know, a team that I kind of looked at as an aging core, and they were kind of on their way out. while Toronto is, you know, taking that next step, trying to take that next step as a real contender in the NHL. The Bruins were able to displace them again. But, I mean, moving forward past that, you know, the Bruins took on the two wildcard teams. They took on the Columbus Blue Jackets, who you got to give them credit for taking out the Tampa Bay Lightning, who, like I said, was the favorite to win it all. But, you know, there's a bunch of mercenaries on that team, if we're being honest. I mean, Matt Duchene, you know, Artemi Panarin, Sergei Bobrovsky, they're all playing for new contracts. And, you know, you kind of knew this thing was going to fold in Columbus after this season, and we'll see what that team becomes. But, you know, there's going to be major turnover on that roster. And that was a team that, you know, best case scenario, probably only had warning track power. And then you look at the Carolina Hurricanes and the run they went on, and it was very impressive. This is their first year in the playoffs in, I think, like a decade. But, you know, they made the conference finals, but that wasn't a team that was ready to contend for the Stanley Cup. Not yet. Just because so many young players, you know, the roster overhaul, if you will, the last few years has been major. And so many guys under the age of 25 and even 23 on that team getting their first playoff experience, they weren't ready to win the cup yet. And Boston took full advantage of that, sweeping them. So it wasn't the toughest road that, you know, a hockey team would endure in today's NHL playoffs. Meanwhile, the St. Louis Blues, they battled to get to where they were. They took on the Winnipeg Jets, which is one of the best young teams, young cores in all of hockey. They made it to the conference final last year. You know, they have franchise cornerstones in guys like Patty Laine and Kyle Connor and Jacob Trouba. We'll see what becomes of him this offseason because it seems like he's always on the trading block. But, you know, that young core, very impressive again this season. And I know they went cold, you know, going into the playoffs. And I think that was kind of the difference in that series for the Blues to come out with a win, was that Winnipeg hadn't played cohesively the last month of the regular season. And it kind of showed in the playoffs as well. But then moving forward, they took out a Dallas team that, okay, probably not the best team out there, but they took out the Nashville Predators, another wild card team displacing a one. So that was what St. Louis had to navigate just to get to the conference finals. And then in the conference finals, they took out the San Jose Sharks, who, again, a lot of mercenaries on that team. Erik Karlsson, I don't think he'll be back next year. We'll see what happens with Joe Thornton, whether he's got another year in him, and even Joe Pavelski. But, you know, that was a team that I actually picked to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning in the Stanley Cup final. That was my champion. And St. Louis just wore them down, and they were able to take them out in six games. And I gave them a lot of credit, and I just said they deserve to be here. And, you know, after one game, I wasn't optimistic about the St. Louis Blues, but I guess I owed them more respect just because of the road they went on to get here. We'll see what becomes of this series moving forward, but I'm not so sure that it's going to be a short series at this point. I think it'll go six or seven games. I'll still give the edge to the Boston Bruins just because I just think the talent discrepancy is still there in terms of skill. You know, Vlad Tarasenko is obviously an unreal player, and Jaden Schwartz has had an unbelievable playoff run for the Blues. But, you know, you look at guys like Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand, and I know Marchand's been quiet, and so has Pasternak recently. But at some point, you got to think those guys are going to wake up and score a big goal at a big time for the Bruins. So I still have the Bruins winning in, we'll say, seven games. But, you know, this game kind of opened my eyes that it's going to be a long series. It's going to be a grind, and I wouldn't be nearly as surprised now if St. Louis wound up winning the Stanley Cup than I was after game one. I was not optimistic. Alec, do you think the Bruins are pulling this out, or do you think yesterday showed you enough to pick the Blues in this series?
I think it's going to be a hard-fought matchup. It's going to go six games, I believe. St. Louis Blues, their defenseman, has really stepped up offensively, scoring two of the three goals yesterday.
Yep.
And Vladdy Tarasenko scoring four straight playoff goals. He's been on a tear offensively.
Goal in four straight games, you're saying?
Yep.
Okay,
four straight playoff games, yep. And you got players like Tyler Bozak and Fabry and Pat Maroon stepping up as well physically. And it's going to be a hard-fought matchup, especially when you got guys like Zdeno Chara and Charlie McAvoy who will be pressuring on the boards physically. You know, it's going to be a hard-fought matchup, no doubt.
But who do you have winning?
I said Bruins in six.
Bruins in six. Okay,
yep.
Gotcha. Yeah, I guess I missed that. Okay, so Alex with Bruins in six. I have the Bruins in seven. Connor, do you have a prediction?
Please, not the Bruins.
Not the Bruins. Okay, so Connor's picking the Blues in how many games? How many games?
I'll go six.
Okay, six. Bold prediction from another in-house hockey expert. That's Connor Mathis. He's not a big hockey guy, people. It's okay. We'll give him a pass on this one. But you know what? What I want to do now is let's hit our first break as we approach about 1:35, about 25 minutes left in the hour. We're going to shift gears here, and we're going to get into a discussion that Connor got to have with Al earlier this week, but I never got to weigh in on this one. I never got to offer up my opinion regarding Joey Hauser and his transition to MSU from Marquette. And one deal I would love to make with the devil or the basketball gods or whoever regarding his future at MSU. I want to know if you agree with me or if you think I'm crazy, that and more. You are listening to AM870 WKAR's Current Sports. Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin. Welcome back. Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports, AM870. Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin. And if you have thoughts on the Stanley Cup Finals, we'd love to hear from you. The phone number is 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. But for now, let's shift gears into the realm of college basketball. And some big news that broke earlier this week, and that is Joey Hauser transferring from Marquette University, playing with Marcus Howard, playing off the ball with Marcus Howard. Now he wants the opportunity to play off of whoever the point guard is for MSU starting in 2020-2021. But obviously this is a huge move for the Michigan State Spartans, and I would argue it is the crown jewel of Tom Izzo's recruiting class this year, if you will, even if he can't play in 2019-2020. Would you agree, Connor?
I'd say it's up there. I like Rocket Watts a lot.
I do too, because just the role he plays, he'll be able to, you know, kind of be the yin to Cassius Winston's yang in that he's a more athletic point guard. He's a little bigger. He's going to be able to spell Cassius the way Foster Lawyer wasn't quite ready to do this year. So I'm excited for that. And it'll be interesting to see what becomes of Lawyer, just because so many people, myself included, probably, I'm very guilty of this, have counted out Foster Lawyer as a player just because of his size and athletic deficiencies. But I mean, you never know. I mean, we saw against Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament that the kid can at least shoot the ball. So, you know, we'll see what becomes of his career. But I agree with you that I'm excited to see Rocket and Cassius together for one season. But I want to know if you think I'm crazy on this regarding Joey Hauser. Is obviously right now what we know is that he'll have to sit out for the 2019-2020 season, you know, because of the transfer rules, right?
Yep.
He could still apply for a waiver.
Probably won't get it.
No, I wouldn't imagine he would. But at the same time, I mean, I don't think Justin Fields should have gotten his waiver going to Ohio State this year, and he did. But I mean,
yeah.
College basketball is another completely different beast than college football. But anyway, the only point I was going to make, and I want to know from you, Connor, and the people listening if I'm crazy on this, is, you know, next season MSU is going to be the preseason favorite to win the national title. Let's just call it like it is, right? And with that being said, I would trade 3 years of Joey Hauser moving forward in 2020, 2021, and 2022 for next year only if I knew he could play with Cassius Winston for one season to go all in on this title. Do you think I'm crazy, or
I don't think that's crazy. If he was able to play for this year, I mean, there's just,
oh my goodness,
there's just, I can't think of many holes on the roster.
There's just so much star power, because I mean, we'll see what becomes of that four spot. Obviously, Xavier Tillman's going to be the starting big man down low. But, I mean, I think that other position is going to be the biggest question mark, because Josh Lankford's coming back from injury. He's going to be in the starting lineup, right? Aaron Henry is going to be in the starting lineup as the wing opposite Lankford. What's going to become of that four spot? Is Marcus Bingham going to be ready after 1 year of development and bulking up to play the role that Kenny Goins kind of played last season? And I think that's what Izzo envisions for him, a guy who plays primarily outside the three-point line. Will Thomas Kithier take the next step to be ready to step in as the next big man playing on the block opposite Xavier Tillman? You know, it's there's a glaring need there for a guy with some experience, and Joey Hauser would fill that. So, to me, I would take 1 year of Joey Hauser next year as opposed to 3 years of him moving forward after Cassius has already moved on from this program.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing with Hauser is every article I see lists him as a stretch four. He plays more like a small forward, to be completely honest. There's very little of that Izzo grit that he likes at the power forward position. So
as, you know, for the for him filling the four spot, I'm not so sure that's the guy you want to go with. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Bingham at five and then, you know, Zave gets bumped back up to four, like his kind of his natural position.
Well, you say Bingham at five. Would that be Bingham playing on the block or outside the three-point line?
I mean, it depends on how much he bulks up. If we're being completely honest, if he gets bigger, I mean, he looks like Diet Jaren Jackson. So, if he gets bigger and he gets a little bit more confidence in the post, I wouldn't be surprised to see him play on the block five. But I mean, we kind of know Xavier Tillman's game. He's going to be predominantly in the paint. Yes, mm-hmm. he can come out and shoot the ball when you need him. Yes, if you need a high.
If there's nobody in the same zip code as Xavier Tillman, he can take a three pointer.
That's fine. But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if predominantly you see the paint dominated by Zave, and then kind of that last year, that little hybrid of, oh, we're going to send our four down to the paint. But he's really more of a mid-range, high pick and roll kind of guy, which I think Bingham could be really good at, even if he doesn't bulk up as much as you would want someone who plays center. If he hit that like mid-range sweet spot, he'd be good. I think it's also good that Langford will probably go back to the two. He's much more of a natural two than he is a three. So I think that'll be a good look for MSU too, as well.
Yeah, and you know what? I had this discussion with Al last year, and that was, I mean, we never got to see what would come of it because Josh Langford got hurt and he never wound up coming back from that injury. But last year, I thought the team would be best suited to bring Josh Langford off the bench if he came back from his injury, because it would have kind of solidified that second unit led by, you know, Foster Lawyer running point, who, I mean, let's call it like it is. Foster Lawyer struggled.
He just needed more.
He struggled in every aspect of the college game last year, because to your point, he wasn't ready. He needed more time, and it was based out of necessity that he was kind of thrown into the fire to play that second point guard role, because I think if you were to ask Tom Izzo, ideally he would have wanted Matt McQuaid playing that second point guard role last season, just because Lawyer wasn't ready. But out of necessity, Foster Lawyer had to take on that role, you know, for the team to reach its goals. And so I wonder if next season who that bench specialist is going to be at the wing position. Could it be a Josh Langford coming off of the bench, and they could slot, let's say, Gabe Brown? What if they slotted Gabe Brown up to the starting lineup if he drastically improves his jump shot?
I would be a lot more comfortable with Gabe Brown off the bench, because then you can mix and match him with some of your stars who take more minutes. So let's say you're giving Josh Langford a rest. Let's say you have an Aaron Henry just needs a breather. I like Gabe Brown off the bench. I think he plays better with like a couple of stars. I don't know if I want him necessarily in the starting lineup, because again, that's asking a lot to go from, you know, guy who gets, what was it, in the tournament, probably like less than 5 minutes, and then just kind of throwing him in the fire. I'd be much more comfortable with a lineup of Cassius at one, Langford two, Henry three, Zave at four or five, and then Bingham at four or five. I think that's my ideal, everything goes according to plan, nothing goes wrong, starting lineup for next year. And then, you know, Gabe Brown and Kithier off the bench is your two kind of your veteran presence off the bench.
You really think Marcus Bingham will be in the starting lineup, that he'll be ready next year over Thomas Kithier?
You know, I think he can be. If he bulks, I think his biggest thing was he just wasn't at the college strength.
He wasn't physically mature enough last year to play big minutes. Absolutely not. But I mean, we don't really know if any of his game was mature enough last year just because of how little we saw of him. That's the only reason I'd have any apprehension. I mean, I think absolutely the best case scenario is Marcus Bingham is in the starting lineup next year, just because I think he's got a higher ceiling. I think he's got more to give in terms of what he can provide out there on the floor, because he can go outside the three-point line, whereas I don't see that from Thomas Kithier. But
he's also more naturally gifted. He's lengthy,
exactly,
and he's tall.
Yep.
If he gets bigger, he gets a little bit more. He gets some defensive prowess. I mean, he could be, you know, another great rim protector. That's my ideal situation. But it wouldn't shock me if we had Kithier coming in at the four and Zave at the five. That would not surprise me. And then just kind of your big men be more of the grit and grind kind of guys instead of, you know, the high pick and roll type stuff we saw last year.
But could you imagine if Joey Hauser had eligibility to play next year? I mean, your bench at that point could consist of both of Marcus Bingham and Thomas Kithier. And then you got the young guys coming in. You have Rocket Watts coming in. You have Malik Henry coming in. You add in Gabe Brown. you know, whatever Foster lawyer is going to give to you. This is a team that legitimately could be 11 or 12 deep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Scary, scary stuff to think about. If only Joey Hauser would be eligible to play next year. Oh, my goodness. Alec, do you think I'm crazy? Would you trade 1 year of Joey Hauser next year for up to 3 years down the line after Cassius Winston has already left MSU, or do you think I'm just absolutely crazy?
No, I think I don't think you're crazy. Howard's been – he hit 42% of his shots from beyond the three-point arc. And, you know, having that extra person beyond the arc is so important, especially because next year is pretty much our all-in year. We're going absolutely all-in. And I feel like I would much rather have 1 year of him next year during this year when we got all these star-studded players coming in recruiting. I just think that the next year would be like the Rockets' last playoffs this past year.
This year, I mean, I feel like we've said it the last couple of years that Tom Izzo has not taken advantage, if you will, of some great opportunities to win a national title, whether it was, you know, when Jaren Jackson and Miles Bridges teamed up when Miles came back for his sophomore year just because of the sheer star power you had on that team. Or, you know, in 2015, 2016, the big three seniors, Denzel Valentine, Bryn Forbes, and Matt Costello as well, that was a team that I think there really wasn't a strong team in college basketball. There wasn't an odds-on favorite that year, and Michigan State was many people's pick to win it all that year. But I feel like next year Tom Izzo will have everything he needs to win a national championship. So, you know, he'll have another great opportunity next year, and I think it's very beneficial as well that, you know, although it was a very disappointing showing in the Final Four this season, that a guy like Cassius Winston, who's going to be relied on to carry the team, already is going to have experience in the Final Four, and that he's going to hopefully not be so intimidated on that big stage.
I mean, the two final points I want to make on this. The greatness of having Cassius come back after facing off against, let's be completely honest, one of the top two defenses in NCAA basketball history.
Oh, that was the most grueling defense I've ever seen.
They were ridiculous. I mean, at least top two all time. Him having that experience and kind of knowing, okay, going in, let's be real. Are we going to see another Texas Tech defense in the next 5 years? I mean, I don't think we are, because that defense was just phenomenal. It is everything you want in on a basketball team: closeouts, traps, the works, rebounding, all that good stuff. So I think that experience is very good for this team coming back. The other point I want to make is, I think bigger picture, no matter what happens next season, I think having Hauser be eligible next year is really good for Michigan State too, because it allows that you don't have a huge like post magnificent team like hangover where you kind of go from like the top of the
there's another guy
to,
you know, is going to be
exactly
back.
Yep, there's another guy who's had experience. He's had playing experience at one school. He's had to learn your system another year. He's older, he's more mature. So I like having that guy in my back pocket no matter what happens next year. That years going forward, you don't have to basically rebuild from quote unquote scratch, even though they wouldn't, because, you know, they still have some good young talent as well.
Sure. No, and I think that's a really key point, because we have no idea how many guys are going to be going to the NBA next year. But I'll be honest with you, I would be stunned if Xavier Tillman's back for his senior season, just because I think he's going to invent, if you will, probably a strong post game coupled with his 3-point shot. And at that point, he's an NBA prospect.
If he gets any sort of stretch in him at all,
he's an NBA prospect. Absolutely.
He will get taken.
And I mean, Aaron Henry as well, with his athletic ability. Let's see what kind of jump he takes in year two.
Develops a jumper, gets a little more physical. He's another good example of what you want in an NBA wing.
So, yeah, no, exactly. So, you know, I totally hear what you're saying there, and that is a really good point, that it will allow Spartan fans to have some peace of mind that, you know, a pure scorer at the four position, or the three, if you will, but a big-bodied pure scorer from outside the three-point line like Joey Hauser coming in after great players like Cassius Winston and probably Xavier Tillman have already left should give some peace of mind to Spartan fans moving forward. So that is a big point. So what I want to do now is we'll hit our second break. And just to close out the show, these last 7 or 8 minutes, if you will, We'll break down the NBA Finals. Game one tonight, obviously, from Toronto. Connor can hope to educate me on why he thinks the Toronto Raptors have some type of a shot in this series, because I don't see it. So that's going to be your job for these next 7 minutes, to sell me. I'm not an NBA guy for this exact reason, that going into the playoffs, I already knew what the outcome was going to be. So please make me care.
All right, I'll do my best.
That and more. You are listening to AM 870 WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back. It is Thursday. It is AM 870 WKR's Current Sports. Jack Kerwin and Pharrell Martin. And as we close out the hour, about 7 minutes left in the program, we'll shift gears here away from college hoops to, you know, the finals that most people will be tuning into over hockey. I can't for the life of me understand why, but oh well, that's not a discussion for today or any day, in my opinion. So we'll shift gears to the NBA Finals. The Golden State Warriors looking to win their fourth title in 5 years. As they take on the Toronto Raptors and Kawhi Leonard, who has just been nothing short of outstanding.
He's a machine.
It's been incredible watching him in these playoffs. And, I mean, I tuned in a little bit in the conference finals, and I saw the last few minutes of Game 7 against Philly as well. So I know enough to know that Kawhi Leonard has been nothing short of phenomenal, just like he was, you know, in San Antonio his last couple of years with the Spurs as well. But Connor's got to square me here as to why he thinks the Toronto Raptors have a shot in these playoffs. And I'm not saying he's picking the Raptors to win this series, because I couldn't even imagine somebody picking the Raptors to beat the Golden State Warriors, just with the championship pedigree of this team. But Connor, please square me on why this series will go more than five games.
Couple reasons. I think if you're leaning towards the Raptors, you can take one. There's one example in NBA history that comes to mind as to why they could possibly win. But take you back to when the Pistons won the championship against Shaq and Kobe.
Sure.
That season, Lakers were a dysfunctional mess between Shaq and Kobe. They had their problems, but they still got it together, got to a finals. I see there's a little bit of that, not to the same horrific level that Lakers team was in dysfunction, but
sure.
On the Warriors, you have early in the year, you have Durant and Draymond beefing.
There's a lot of drama.
You have Kevin Durant complaining and whining about the media, like, I'm being painted an unfair picture. You know, he says he's trying not to focus on free agency, but by the whining, the complaining, the burner accounts, all that junk, he's shifting focus away. Then you have the other storyline of the Warriors, two of their phenomenal players, Boogie and KD, both are injured. Boogie's coming off another lower leg injury again, after being cold for most of the playoffs. Kevin Durant, who knows if he's going to come back? He's also coming off an injury. So my point is the thing you would kind of bet on for the Raptors is that, A, they can capitalize a little bit on this, on a little bit of the kind of chaos surrounding the Warriors. I think the Warriors, I've said it in all playoffs, I think when you watch every time they've lost, their greatest weakness is when they get in their own heads. They're complaining to refs about calls. Things aren't going their way. They throw temper tantrums. Draymond is a big culprit of this. Getting stupid technicals.
I thought you were going to call him a big crybaby.
That's
where I thought you were leaning towards, to be honest.
I'll leave it at he's a culprit of that kind of behavior. But, you know, I think the Raptors, they kind of can hold it together because their leader is a robot. Kawhi Leonard can, for better or worse, shows very little emotion. He can keep it together. You know, you never see him like throwing temper tantrums. Something doesn't go his way. Okay, back on defense, on to the next play. You see him, you know, I brought up to Al earlier this week. He baptized Giannis on national TV, not once, but twice. In a deciding,
I don't even know where you're sitting at. But.
There it is.
Love it. He's a robot. He's a robot.
I don't even know if that's robotic or just like really.
No, he's
weird.
A robot. He's a robot.
He is a robot.
He's
but
a cyborg.
I mean, his laugh. I don't know if that's robotic or just weird.
It was forced.
Have you seen the meme where it's like a scene from iRobot and Kawhi Leonard's face is put on one of the robots hiding, and he comes out and strikes Will Smith, and then proceeds with the laugh, which is absolutely hilarious.
I'm not familiar. I guess Connor's seen it before.
It's pretty funny.
But okay, here's one thing I just need your opinion on. I'm on a betting website right now, and the Warriors are getting 1.5 points right now. They are not favored in game one. Please square me on why I shouldn't bet the mortgage on the Golden State Warriors winning tonight.
You know, only thing I can say
they're getting a point and a half.
Only thing, again, I'm going to go back to the Lakers dynasty on this one. I'm going back to the Lakers dynasty here. That game when they played the 76ers in that finals, they lost game one. You know, and but then they went on to I could see this series going the Raptors either go the Pistons route, but not in five games. They could go the Pistons route, and they split with Golden State, and then we can keep going, we can keep pushing, or it could be Raptors punch first. Golden State realize we're not playing anymore, and just kind of blows them out of the water. So I wouldn't be surprised.
You wouldn't be surprised if the Raptors won tonight?
No, I wouldn't be surprised. No,
fair enough.
I wouldn't be surprised if they steal if they can steal the first game, kind of catch them off guard, because I they have a good rim protector. They've got Kawhi Leonard, who's one of the more underrated defensive players of all time. He's probably the best wing defender of all time. But I think they could steal one. I mean, people kind of are sleeping on the Raptors. They've proven that they can do a lot with just Kawhi popping off and like one or two other people doing the bare minimum. And I mean, if Siakam, their power forward, gets going, I would be nervous about the Golden State Warriors. But again, the Golden State Warriors can always answer with a bevy of three. So
yep, exactly. So look me in the eye right now. Would you bet the Raptors to cover a point and a half tonight or no?
I'd take that, yeah.
You think the Raptors are winning?
I think they'll win tonight.
Wow, that's bold. Alec, what about you? Who do you have winning in game one tonight?
Realistically, Golden State, but I wouldn't be surprised if Kawhi and Siakam lead them to a victory and Drake on the sidelines, you know, with his antics.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so tired of Drake. Oh, my goodness.
I think he's so benign.
It's awful.
The fact that he can just come up and massage the coach from behind is just kind of off-putting to me.
I hope a basketball bounces off his head at some point in tonight's game. I don't want him to get injured. I don't want anyone to get injured. But oh my goodness, I cannot put up with Drake on the sideline anymore. I thought this was a tired bit about 3 years ago. But as we approach the end of the hour, I want to thank everyone for tuning in. We'll be right back here, same time, same place, tomorrow afternoon to break down game one of the NBA Finals. And we'll give you our thoughts on the Juwan Howard press conference that took place earlier in the afternoon as well. So everyone, thanks for tuning in. Same time, same place tomorrow. Jack Kerwin, Connor Mathis, Alec Rio, in for Al Martin. Have a great day and be easy, people.